in the presentation is setting up very comprehensive performance management systems and also making sure that we have robust internal control systems. And I do want to remind the board that for the two consecutive years we have had an unqualified audit, and we continuously improve all our processes in this regard. In terms,
I'm sure you are reminded.
I think I speak to the board a lot. I'm sorry, the portfolio committee. In terms of the focus areas, that is for 2008 and 9, my apologies for that. The focus areas for 2008 and 9 are on the four critical areas. The first one is improving customer focused service delivery. What we mean here is that when entrepreneurs get to SIGA centers or SIGA related entities, we should be able to follow up and ensure that they have a system of reporting back to say what kind of service they got. And we will show later how we're going to address this. The second one is, as I mentioned before, the improvement of coordination, harmonization with other role players. Again, just making sure that there is no wrong door for small businesses. I've already spoken to the building of a performance-driven organization. And the final one, but which is very important for us as an institution that is supporting non-financial services, is the issue of financial stability in the first instance, and in the long term, the financial sustainability. In this slide, we were trying to show the portfolio committee members in one look what the value chain of SIGA is. When we look at our inputs, our activities, our outputs, and the outcomes we would like to see. And we are saying here with a staff of 521 and with the infrastructure that we intend to have in this coming financial year, which is 51 branches, 90 enterprise centers, 34 co-location arrangements. Here we talk about where we have SIGA staff sitting in some municipal offices, or where we have other organizations using SIGA infrastructure. And 28 technology centers, it's not 23, for 2008 and 2009, we will have 28 of these centers. This is the current number that we have. And with the financial resources that we are requesting of 535 million, we will be able to do all the activities that we are showing on the right. I hope you are all able to see them from the copies. And also, over and above this, we are going to be focusing on key programs, and I will talk about these programs in detail later on. And because of all these inputs, we will be able to double the number of clients that we are currently supporting, and I will show later how many clients we are reaching. And of course, the outcomes and the development impact we hope we will have, in fact, we know we will have because of this, is improved sustainability of small businesses, improved growth, improved access to markets, improved access to finance, and more new enterprises. And our monitoring and evaluation system is actually designed to capture these outcomes. Now, as I indicated earlier on, we will just focus on key initiatives that we have not included some of the programs that we are currently doing at SIGA, but we can highlight some of them maybe when we talk about partnerships. The first key initiative came out of the realization that there is always a challenge of having people, enough people with the capacity to deliver services to support small businesses. And if we do not continuously build this capacity, then we will definitely have a challenge going forward. Currently, SIGA has developed quite a number of tools And we share these tools with a whole range of other institutions. And with this learning academy, we will be able, as the institution, not only to train our own staff in the form of information officers, business advisors, but will also help to build capacity of other small business service providers. And we have had a number of requests around this. The second area is really an initiative that came through the integrated strategy, which is recommending that we should have a forum for all small enterprise development agencies so that we ensure that for each new program that comes through, that will have been vetted through that structure. And as you can see in the caption there, that we are expected to take a lead in ensuring that there is this coordination of public funded SMME initiatives, then we'll be able to have a comprehensive report of what is the government impact in terms of small business support. When we talk of integration, we're not talking of having all the institutions under CEDA or a CEDA organization. We're talking again about this concept of not having any wrong door for small businesses. The third one is the 2010 process for small enterprises. There is initial work that we have been doing to try and see how we can bring the information and the support to small enterprises so that they are not left behind in terms of the opportunities for the 2010 Soccer World Cup. I think we have just heard recently in the news that there is up to 30% of the procurement opportunities that will emerge for small business. But we cannot just assume that it will happen on its own. We have to ensure that there is a system to help them to do so. The other program, which is a trade coin program, which is a partnership with various chambers of commerce in KZN, in Gauteng, and here in Cape Town, to open a system of accessing overseas markets. This is already up and running, and this will get to scale in the current year. Then the next one, which also is not exactly new initiative, because CEDA is doing some work in this area of procurement support, but because there is this opportunity of having some certified products to be procured from small businesses, we need to ensure that this can happen, because as we know, most of the time what happens, even if these opportunities are there, you will find that the people who need to procure these services will say, where do we get this small business? Do they have the capacity to service us? And therefore, that's why we need to have a comprehensive program to ensure that the products of small businesses get their way to where they need to supply. The next one, which is something I already referred to, I just want to highlight here that in the past, through our call center, we have been receiving some requests or calls for people who need assistance in terms of getting payments from some government departments. And really what has been happening is that we were not able to assist them comprehensively. We could just liaise with those departments, but we didn't have the kit to actually take this further. And I think with the mandate that we got through the State of Nation, now we are setting up a comprehensive system to ensure that we are able to track every complaint and take it to its logical conclusion, and also report on a monthly basis to the DTI on where the trouble spots are and what needs to be done in terms of solutions. The coordination support measures, I think I've spoken to that. So these are the key programs that we will be focusing on this year. If you look back to the slide that we had earlier on, where I said I'm giving a global view of what CEDA is doing, there is a program that we call Rural Enterprise Development Program. Currently, CEDA is doing quite a number of projects which are supporting a rural-based small enterprises, working with communities and linking them with a private sector to set up sustainable enterprises. This program will also be upscaled this year. In terms of partnerships, we just thought we should just flag some of the partnerships that we have. And through each partnership, there is a project or a program that we have. I can just give some of the examples. For example, with Productivity SA, which used to be the National Productivity Institute, we have a program that's targeting 1,000 small businesses to enhance the productive capacity of small businesses. But I will not go through all the initiatives, but these are the partnerships that we have. In terms of highlights, we thought that we should share with the committee members the figures, that is the number of small businesses we have reached up to the end of December 2007, and we will obviously have updated figures for end of March. This is just an indication by province of how many people we are reaching. And the differences you see there, for example, if you look at KwaZulu-Natal, it's because of the number of centers that we have. This is a province where we have the highest number of centers, and of course because of the population statistics of the provinces. And if you look at Gauteng, we only have one center there, and that is showing why we have that reach. And this is the number I say we will be able to double in the coming financial year. In terms of the rollout summary, that is in the highlights where we are today, we currently have had those targets in terms of branches. We plan to have 43, we have 42. In fact, the 43rd branch, which is in the Alfred Indoor area, is started to be up and running in January. So this is the kind of infrastructure we have. And in terms of feeder technology centers, the target for 2008-09 is 28, not 23. So we currently have 23 and the target is 28. In terms of the geographic spread, you can see in the pie chart that we are 24%, we have a peri-urban spread, which is 66% rural, 24%, and in the metros, we are still on 10%. And the additional branches that we have, we have had requests from some of the municipalities in the metro areas. And as you can see in the picture there, three data centers are linked to municipalities. Hence, even when we name them by a municipality. And when I go towards conclusion, Chairperson and members, these are the services. We have packaged feeder services into four areas. And this really is an attempt to make sure that we reach small enterprises in a simple manner and in their language. So we've divided our work into the four areas. The first one is what we call feeder business talk, but this is about information giving, workshops, roadshows that give people information. The second one is about people who want to start a business because they have different needs. The third one is about people who are already in business who want to build and grow their businesses because they need different instruments and different interventions. And the last one is where people are already running established businesses, wanting to reach an export market or to internationalize their businesses. I will hand over now to the Executive Manager of the CEDA Technology Program just to take you through the SDP program in CEDA.
Thanks, Wawa. Mr. Chair, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues of the DTI, it is a great pleasure for me just to give you some background information on the CEDA Technology Program. It's just a few slides. I think most of you have heard from us already previously, and I think this is going to be a refresher and also hopefully going to be something that will please all of you. Just to recap, CEDA Technology was created on the 1st of April 2006 when the DTI merged the Khadisa Trust and the National Technology Transfer Center and the Technology Advisory Center of the DTI. On the 1st of April this year, the South African Quality Institute and the Technology Transfer Activities of the Technology for Women in Business program, TWIB, will also be incorporated into TWIB. And in that way, we would be able to provide a much more comprehensive package of services as far as technology transfer, business incubation, and quality support for small enterprises are concerned. If we look at the problem tree about some of the main reasons as to why we are experiencing low rates of economic growth and weak competitiveness of some of our small enterprises, and we look at the causes of that, we see that small enterprises are often using outdated technologies, that poor technology is being employed by those companies. Many small companies are not entering the higher value or higher levels of beneficiation in different sectors, particularly in manufacturing. We're seeing that there's high failure rates of small enterprises, and also the small enterprises are not properly accessing that technology and that support that is available. And those form the core functions of all the centers that we support through the CEDA Technology Program. And it really remains the essence of the business of all the centers, the technology business centers that we support, addressing issues of outdated technology, low levels of technology being deployed in companies, and trying to encourage more and more small enterprises to enter higher value sectors. SDP delivers on its mandate through these different technology business centers, or incubators as they commonly refer to, and we interact with all our companies, or we assist them through business incubation, technology transfer, and in the future, from 1st April onwards, also through quality and quality standard support interventions. Our business incubators provide a variety of specialized and highly focused business development, infrastructure, and other support services, which are all geared towards assisting entrepreneurs and innovators to establish new businesses, and then also to help the existing ones to accelerate their growth and development. The SDP technology transfer interventions are also designed to provide startups and existing small enterprises with access to special grant funding for the acquisition of technology to increase their productivity and profitability. And in this regard, we have a grant which is up to a maximum of 500,000 rand, which is really to acquire such technological innovations. And the amazing thing we've experienced in this regard is that to date, 61% of all our business, all our technology transfer interventions have gone towards women-owned businesses. From the 1st of April, SDP will also provide a variety of quality standard support services which are designed to improve the overall operating and business management systems of small enterprises. And this competency will be coming from the staff of the South African Quality Institute, who will be merged with SDP. Mr. Chair, we have a few photos here, and I think these photos can speak a million words about what technology can do. The three columns in this photo reflect high, medium, and low-tech interventions. And I'm going to start with a low-tech intervention. Although if there's anybody from the agriculture sector, they're probably not enjoying me saying that it's a low-tech intervention. If you look at that picture in the middle, and you see on the right-hand side, if you see on the left-hand side, the sugarcane fields over there, those are clients in the Malalane district of Mpumalanga. People who are farming sugar at the moment without the support of our incubator. On the right-hand side of the picture, this farm over here belongs to a farmer who is receiving support from the sugarcane incubator. These fields were planted at the same time, and the farmer who has been receiving help from the incubator, his cane fields are currently nearly a meter taller than the farmer who has not been receiving support, because the inputs come in the form of knowing what kind of systems to use, irrigation systems, what kind of fertilizers to use, the right kind of interventions that you need to be able to get the optimum yield out of your activities. In addition to that sort of agro side of the business, the farmers are also exposed to all the aspects of growing or setting up viable and sustainable farming operations, trained on how to use the technology and how to understand it in a way that they can operate independent of the incubator and the extension services of our partner organizations. On the right hand side, these steel rings over here are called paw rings. They, in the past, they were imported from China, and our Mpumalanga Stainless Incubator has, in partnership with the Chumisano Trust of the DST, developed the machinery to help a group of small manufacturing businesses in Middelburg to develop those paw rings there. This is the first batch of the order to settle, which is 600,000 rand. The total order for this year and the first 6 months of next year is going to be 20 million rand. Mr. Chair, on the far left there, the little plastic thing there with a little polymer gel in the middle is a product called iSlices. Our Egoli Bio, a biotechnology incubator, helped the owner set up this business. Last month, she sold 25% of her business for 7 million rand. And that is money that's now being injected into her business because of this equity that is bought out. She secured contracts with Boots in London and Emirates Airlines. And I think this is just an indication in terms of the high-tech areas where technology and technology support really does make a difference. Mr. Chair, one of the exciting things that we've been able to achieve, or with the support of the DTI that we are going to be getting underway this year, is the launch of 5 new centres, one of which is a what we refer to as a mixed manufacturing technology demonstration centre. This is based on the Indian model of low-tech business startup creation, or what they call the low-tech incubators. The Indian government has been, and the National Small Industries Council of India has focused in particular on creating businesses based on simplified technologies, small-scale production of stuff of certain products. And we're going to be focusing on that model where you take unskilled people or people with very limited education to, through the process of manufacturing specific products for a local environment, you provide them with the training and all the technology that they need. We're launching our center in Shoshanguve in May or early June this year, and that's the first of those 5 centers. We'll also be launching a different array of services around access to technology, which I will speak about later. And then one of the most exciting things that we've done so far is increasing the survival rate of small enterprises that we're helping. And in the year ending 31 March 2007, our figure for second year survival rate was up to 90%. Mr. Chair, as I indicated earlier on, we have also been introducing a new range of services around access to technology, because at the moment our focus in the technology transfer division has been primarily based on the technology transfer fund. Now we will be providing structured information and advice on technology service providers and other support agencies, information and advice on the available technologies within selected sectors, as well as strengthening the capacity of all our existing centres to improve their reach and their impact. These are going to be 3 or 4 of the core activities within the overall access to technology domain of CEDA.
Good morning, everyone, Chair, ladies and gentlemen, members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues. What I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be taking us through basically the budgeting and the expenditure for the 2008-2009 financial year. What I thought was adequate was just to plot for the members the thinking behind the way the budgets were drawn up. What we had done was we had looked at the 3 stages of budgeting. Given limited resources and the economic theory of unlimited wants and needs, we've basically blocked it into 3 groups. The first block, which is split into 3 further ones, is what an organization would call spend that is needed just to maintain the current momentum. The second block would be items where an organization would try to improve business efficiency and results and improve return on investment. And the last block on the far right hand side is your strategic opportunity investment cost. I've just also plotted the trend in the budget from the 2005-06 financial year through to the 2008-09 financial year. We can see the big jumps from the inception of CEDA. Interesting to note is also from the 2006-07 to the 2007-08 financial year, where there was actually a bit of a decrease in the budget. On my next slide, I've just plotted the proposed income and sources of income for the 2008-09 financial year compared to the prior year. Just splitting it into one of our sources of income being obviously from the Department of Trade and Industry, from which we've received support. One of the partners which you've seen on one of the previous slides, the funding we received from the Finnish government. We also received funding from the provincial government. And interesting to note is the decrease compared to the prior year and the current year, a decrease of about 55%. I've also just shown in the graph, in the pie chart, the decreasing trend in the income received from the various sources of funding. On my next slide, I've just depicted some of the expenditure categories. The first one being all the programs, products, and what we call business services, which the CEO had spoken to in terms of our business thought, and that is really improving our service delivery to our customers. The next line item is your staff and your other costs, and something which is required in an organization like CEDA, which also helps us increase the performance and the delivery to our customers, is all the strengthening and support initiatives of the organization. I think the CEO has mentioned the performance management system, the robust financials and internal control systems, and the risk management system. So those are all those categories over there. On the next slide, it's basically the same information, just showing specifically our expenditure per category. You can see that our program cost is about 50% of our total budget. And interesting also to note is, we just thought, on our staff costs, we can see that about almost 50% of the staff costs is actually relating to staff, operational staff that are positioned in the provinces. So those are the staff that are directly assisting our SMEs and our customers. I think this comes back to my first graph. We have just sort of split the various expenditure into items, should the funding be uncertain or limited, into items that we think we must do, into items which we believe we should do, which is more your improving your operations, and items which we can do, provided we have the financial and other resources. I think this is an interesting slide. It shows basically, it talks to one of the previous slides where I talked about confirmed income being the income from the Finnish government and the DTI versus the unconfirmed income, the income from the provincial government and as well other income which CEDA believes CEDA will generate versus the must, should and can do expenditure categories. So I just wanted to plot that to show that if we compare the income that is confirmed versus the expenditure categories we believe we must do, it looks like it's about a deficit of about 165 million in that graph. And then I think just to highlight to the committee where the major increases in the budget are compared to the prior year, mostly around the procurement support, for which we set aside about 16.8 million. The customer hotline for the late payments, about 5 million. The products and services, repackaging, the needs-based establishment of the new branches, and the learning academy that the CEO has spoken to. In total, it comes to about 100 million. On the CEDA technology budget, there's income of about 64 million that has been approved. and then a one of 25 million from the SWIP funding, which I think Charles has spoken to, that's to fund the five new centers or incubators. And then I've also just plotted the various expenditure items in terms of the various categories, which the members can see on the slide. Thank you.
Chairperson, just to conclude, I think the key message in terms of the budget is that the current allocation that we have in the MTF will only enable us to do part of what we are currently doing, and we will not be able to do the new things that you spoke about, but we do know that the department is looking into that. I just also want to show the development impact of some of the programs we're talking to. And very briefly, on the right, we have taken some stories from the provinces. And the one on the far right with the young gentleman with the computer is a small business in the Northern Cape that we assisted to get work from the African Bank, which was a contract worth about 2.8 million. And in the process, he was able to create 15 jobs. And also in the photo down there with the DJ, that is a Northwest story, where we assisted this young entrepreneur to set up a school for radio presenters and DJs, and creating, in fact, through that training, people are getting work in radio stations, and it's actually quite a beautiful story. And in the far left, it's two Western Cape-based small enterprises that will help to export wine and this mystic chili sauce. And these are some of the development impacts that we are showing, where the difference between getting support and not getting support would have been different. And just to conclude, I just want to highlight some of the challenges. These challenges really are covering both challenges for small businesses in general and the challenges of SEDA as an institution. I think the first one is the issue of really reviewing the baseline in terms of the funding for SEDA, which is saying that our funding was based on our history, which was an addition of the institutions that were merged to create us, and this has not yet been revised. And there is a challenge regarding that, because it's also emerged in our annual report in terms of the Auditor General's report. The second and third ones are really more about the impact, the negative impact that could really be there for small businesses in terms of the issues of the energy challenges and so on, which means we really have to enhance our support for small business in the face of such challenges. And the last one really is just the long-term process in terms of building working relations with a whole range of stakeholders. But that is, we have found that that is inevitable. It's just the only way you can work to support small businesses. You have to work with a whole range of stakeholders. And the final one, which I haven't necessarily put in here, is the issue of measurement. I think, like we have had with lending institutions, it is much easier to indicate what you have disbursed, what the small businesses have benefited. But if you are a non-financial support institution, that is much more challenging to say, quantify exactly what you have done as an institution. And like the example I have made of the Northern Cape story, African Bank can claim the same story and said, if I didn't get the contract, this person wouldn't succeed. But as SEDA, we know if we didn't support this person, they wouldn't have got the contract. So there are dual claims to any success in small business. And just to conclude, Chairperson and members, we believe that SEDA is ready to take on initiatives that position small businesses in the mainstream economy. We have started to do that, and we see the results, and we would like to take this forward. And the second element is that we believe we have established a firm footing with infrastructure that is ready, and products and services that are properly developed and packaged, as we have shown. And again, ongoing support of key stakeholders is critical for the period ahead, and partnerships with both public and private sector institutions is beginning to yield results for us. And we believe if we do get the approval of the budget, we will be able to deliver on what we have presented to you. And once again, I want to thank the chairperson and the committee members for the continuous feedback that they give to us when they meet with clients of CEDA. It helps us to improve our service. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, ma'am, and the other presenters. I must say your photograph of the sugarcane plantation, it reminds me of the before and after photograph, where you see a man with, like myself, without hair, and then the next thing you see with the big effort. Members, your opportunity for comments and questions, obviously. I see the good professor
Thanks, Chair. I'm very pleased that the DG is here because I want to make some rather general remarks, not for reply, but for noting. Firstly, we've heard now, this is the fourth presentation by this kind of organization, and I feel all the time that we're really operating at a very minuscule scale. And I wonder whether the time hasn't come for the department to give us a picture of the total need in this country and then look at what is being done as a proportion of the total need. I know that's difficult, but I think it's necessary that we get a perspective of just how far are we in relation to what is required. And so I would make that request of the department. Tell us what is the estimated total need of small business, because in every policy speech that we make, we always say SMMEs, and the World Bank, all these people say the key to employment, the key to this is SMEs. So what is the target nationally? And then we can look at CEDA and sum up and say, you know, what small corner have you achieved of that total need? So let's get a bit of perspective. And also, if we don't do that, we can't assess our growth. It's a bit like analyzing employment. If the number of people coming onto the market is growing faster than the jobs you've created, then you have falling statistics. And it may be that the need is growing because of population growth or this and that and the other, and therefore the achievement of what's being sold here, it may be a smaller and smaller proportion of the need. So we need to get that sort of total analysis. Secondly, both reports have focused on the financial side of things, much less on the policy side. And I understand, we've had excellent reports, and I particularly was impressed with Mr. Martes' firm grip of his organization. I mean, it shows he knows what he's about. But this emphasis on the financial controls and blah, blah, you know, but what is the... I think one needs more, I don't want to use the word philosophical, but more policy orientation. What are actually the problems? Where are we going? And because the financial statistics on themselves, well, you're good performing and you're going to get a good credit from the Auditor General, but, you know, okay, so what? Because, you see, Chair, last night, the reason I was nodding off is that last night I had a meeting in my constituency, a public meeting, and I was hammered over Kula and CEDA. And this happens every time. People are saying, they said to me last night, we want to start this, we want to start that, where's government? No support at all. So I also should say, Chair, that I have offered CEDA the use of my constituency office as a base. We had a very good meeting in my constituency, a public meeting. Our colleague was present. And it's true the turnout wasn't as high as we wanted, but it was a good meeting, and they were there and explained the whole story. As a result of that, I said, please, I offer you the resources of my office and the staff and the phone and whatnot. Come and work in my constituency. There has been a bit of contact, but it's minor. So in terms of the national lead and in terms of a rollout, as far as I'm concerned, among my people, if I may use that phrase, my constituency, again, one has to say that it's a bit disappointing. Now, on the page three, which one is it now? Yeah. Clearly, there's a high failure rate. Now, this is international experience, and we don't blame anybody. Point three of the something's happening to this. Right. Now, we're told a high failure rate of funded institutions. I don't blame some up. The territory is difficult. But we do have to say something must be done about it. Emergency action. And we can't just sit back and say this is the scorecard and this is where we are. And it seems to me that the whole country must say something is not happening. Because that's why I wanted the first presentation. Something is not happening. We talk at policy statements, state of the nation speeches, small enterprise, really, every time. But it's not happening adequately because of the failure rate, because of inadequate funding. So, you know, I really think if we're going to be serious, we need to do a little bit of crisis analysis and say, what are we going to do as a country? And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. And then my last point is, I'm just trying to find it. I can't find it. Well, I think I've made my point, and Chair, I must ask your leave. I have to get somewhere and do something, so please excuse me. These are not questions, they're comments. They're comments that we've made before, and I'm just urging a little bit more crisis management attitude to the whole story. We need to uplift the whole sector, Kula, sum up the whole lot. And just final comment, I can't help the last comment. When you look at the proportion of funding of DDI and the degree to which the country is taking seriously, this terrain really is fairly pathetic. The whole terrain. And I think this committee ought to begin to exercise a bit of muscle and say to the cabinet, the proportion of funding for this whole terrain is far too inadequate. It's messing around in a very small scale when the need is huge. Thanks.
Thanks, Prosecutor. You see, the issue that you raised, you raised it correctly, that there are policy issues. That's where more substantively we'll engage the department. And then correctly you raised issues that pertain to the agencies work at the coalface. And obviously they respond to the sectors that they are operative in. And it will speak to some of the policy issues. Where policy assists and where there are loopholes in policies, where things can be better. Now, you raised those important points, but the downside is that unfortunately you are rushing elsewhere. Now, they are also going to respond, and you are not yet. You have raised important issues, and next time we meet, the same issues are raised. You have not had the benefit of the direct answers. No, I'm just making a point, you see. I know that you've got competing agendas and things, but as I said in the last meeting, in order for this contract to derive maximum benefit, there should be this interaction. The points that you make, they are fundamental, they are very important, but I'm sure they'd also like to have a rejoinder. Tell you, in our corner, this is what's happening. And at the appropriate time, we just say that the DG has a listening brief. You can participate, but correctly, there are policy issues that you need to take up with the department and others, with ministers and cabinet. So we will do that, but I'm just saying that I come back to that basic point, the rules of engagement. We pose questions, make statements, should be able to give the other party a chance of it.
I stand corrected and will stay.
Chair, thank you very much. I think there are a number of things which is very prevalent and which I think I concur with the lady submission, is that the cost of capital is extremely high at the present moment, and I think that that's got we should not underestimate the negative effect of the present cost of capital. And then secondly, I think one of the presenters said something that our small business sector is very much geared or molded upon the Indian model. Now, I don't know who mentioned this and so forth. I think this is food for thought as well. I don't know, you cannot compare our economy of scale with that of India, but still I think what is remarkable is the degree of entrepreneurship, they say, that you find in India when it comes to exports by Indian manufacturers. And I think maybe that's food for thought as well, and maybe we should use that particular model for, especially for in our rural areas where there's no advanced infrastructure. What I actually want to ask I don't see that. Is there a program in place which will help? I know it's a very sort of a vulnerable sector, but do they have adequate insurance policies? Or is there anything to cover their when they loan, when they make money available for startup loans and so forth, is there a fair degree of security? Is there insurance? Is there a way of getting back that particular money? Because I believe that the write-off amount is a fair large amount as well. I'd just like to have their views on that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Very much. Comrade Cousin, you are next.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must thank the presenters, Siga and Tama, this morning. The first thing that I want to just raise is that from Polokwane, we actually passed a resolution that we need to build and strengthen this development agency, finance agencies and other agencies to effectively channel financial and institutional resources towards the SMEs and cooperatives, etc., and others, in order to promote local and regional economic development. That has to change, that we must change, and ensure that the work that we do is effective. And the president also came up in the State of the Nation address to say that we must now do business as usual. Because this business as usual has not actually gone any further. You know, that is actually witnessed by all of us on the ground, that things are not shaping up well. You know, the gap between the rich and the poor still grows unabated. From the poor second economy, there's nothing much that is being done. So we are heading for a disaster if we don't change. So you would have to tell us at some point that whether you have planned and prepared for business as usual. The information that we give, how does it go? How far does it go in terms of doing business as usual? Now I'll take some first. because that statement actually goes for both cedar and palm. I'll take palm first and then thank them for pointing out that they are looking at the to start a school, not a political school, chair, a school center for learning, they say. Center for learning, center of learning for microfinance. And I think that is quite appreciated from our side, because we want those people to fund them from actually men. And we talked about issues of examination and that they pass. That is very important. That's what we need to see. And that goes with the fact that you said you work with partners. Like, thank you. Very weak, but you see that. You must know that if you partner with this and that, you are bound to have some other troubles and problems, and therefore you need to look into the some intervention, whether DTI will come in and the Department of Labor will come in, because Bank Sita has been, for the past 3 years, I think, has been asked by many of these microfinances to assist. They haven't passed. I once attended another meeting, a conference of a call, where almost every institution cried out about the performance of them. But I wanted just to highlight the importance of that work that you have indicated. It's very important. And that is actually also solve the problems that have been highlighted by Comrade Professor Kiro, the failures that we talked about, that are going to be remedied if we are actually going down there. Even before people could be funded, you know, you would need actually to go into this particular training, go into examination in the past. But I also wanted to check with you as to how far do you monitor your provinces and your locals, because some of us think that the performance of your provinces might not be what you expect or what we expect here in Parliament, and therefore that would actually also inhibit the progress of the microfinance organizations that are there. And we expect that provincial officials that are there should be of activists, you know. They would know all the corners of their districts and regions and the people that they serve, they service. I don't know how much work are you doing in terms, or do you just receive reports from them? Is it there? It's in Pretoria, I don't know, just, and you just ask them through telephones and emails, and they report to you anything that they report, you take it as granted that this is what they are doing. I think that it helps to the turnaround time. You said it's 96 days. And it's improved now to say it is you're going to 8 days. Huh? Is this true? Is this true? Because some of us have actually, after we got frustrated by Tika and Kula that time, we've been monitoring, because many organizations collapsed even before they could actually get this assistance from these agencies. They collapse. And even now, what we see does not differ much from what happened then. So that is why we ask you about this, this thing. A credible organization, you talked about that you work with accredited organizations, and you talked about credible again. I think that is important. It will go also to see that. Because we think that some of the organizations that are utilized by you, who are credited, may not be credible because of the work that, the quality of the work that they do. So you would actually also highlight something around that. I think I'm done with you, but are you satisfied with the budget that you get, that it would actually make a difference to the expectation of our national objective? CEDA, I must say, CEDA is actually well grounded now. It is well grounded and it is known in many quarters. And I am pleased to get the work that they do in terms of the technology work that has been done by CEDA and the rural enterprise development program that you do, but would need to check as to the impact of this work, of this program, at the level of rural rural areas and peri-urban areas as well. I am pleased to indicate to get that you said you talked about no wrong door issues. You must not entertain wrong door issues. In that, if a person comes, he would either get assistance and support in that office, or if not, I think that it means if not, then they will be referred to the correct door. I think if that work has been done by CEDA, I must also say that I can witness myself that your partnership with Umsobomvu at the lower level is shaping up where we see it happening. We see it happening, I think. But your regional and provincial directorates or offices also, you know, the Freiburg, I know some regions in the Northwest, Freiburg and Southern, because Southern District, Bukirima District, at Bukirima, in terms of actually networking with various municipalities and ensuring that people, you know, because Bukirima is vast, you know, the vast area, and those towns and municipalities are very poor. And that's where work of CEDA is mostly needed, because I've come across people who have, in a way, lost confidence in the CEDA office, in that they've actually run to private other people for business plans and other things. So I don't know, how do you, this might not be the only area, how do you monitor and ensure that this office is, because we need activists, people that are not just going to sit in those provincial offices and say that they can send you closing pictures and reports, and you get satisfied that they are doing the work. We need to see the quantity and quality as well. Quantity, how many people are there? So that talks to your report as well, that you would need, there's no way that you cannot say, this is the quantity that we have actually managed to do as a national organization. This is the quality arising from all the provinces and your offices, and say, this is, even if this other bank can claim this next and he said it's not going to be back. Okay. Even if other institutions or organizations or companies can claim that they funded, but if you really did do the work in terms of developing business plans for these people, that should actually talk to the number of people that you have actually assisted. You know, we know that others, after being assisted by Kula, by Sida, they would go to Sama.
Mr. Smith, I'm about to show you a red card. It's about 6 minutes now.
How many
more
minutes?
No.
No, because it is a group in the center. You know, things are bad. What is it? The leg payment of the money, the money given by the executive to manage this outside, and how are you going to do it?
Thank you very much, Mr. Jasmin. I'm sure the comments and all the questions are well taken. Ma'am Farida?
Thank you, Chief. I just want to ask, I think in terms of CEDA, could you tell us a bit more about your 5 new incubators? I must admit there's a lot of work that is being done, and I want to commend the institution. But I want to also allude to the fact that there's lots more that needs to be done in terms of advocacy, particularly, because I think advocacy is the key to success. And if people know more about you, the better it is. So I want us to maybe consider that as one of the primary objectives. I want to know from both institutions, do you have rollovers, and what are the figures in terms of your bed debts, perhaps those that you could tell us that are not successful in terms of CEDA, I think. But I think some of will be able to tell us bed debts, actual figures. I must compliment Summer for your wonderful record on your women's. You've given 66% of your budget to women, and you've also employed more women than men, I see in your figures, although I need a little bit of more detail as to which echelons they occupy. Perhaps that would help us. I think I'm a bit concerned, perhaps the DG could take note of that as well, in terms of your staff turnovers. I do believe that in my constituency, I have raised this as a complaint, that there is a huge amount of staff turnover. And somehow when they give these, let's say they apply for something in your department or your institution, when they go back, suddenly there's somebody else there. And that person doesn't know anything about that contract. So that becomes a bit of a problem, because that person now has to relearn or rearrange his or her own schedule to be able to respond to the inquiry that is at hand. So I want that to perhaps just be noted by the DG in terms of how we're going to deal with that. I do think I picked up on both sides that there's a huge amount of vacancies. Perhaps that could be something that needs to urgently be addressed, because vacancies shows a weakness in a department. And I think I know there's some efforts that are being made with regard to capacity building, but I don't think enough is being made, done. Perhaps that could be something that should be top on the agenda, because human capital we have, but how do we exploit that human capital to ensure that these people put into those jobs that are required? I think I just want to lastly say that perhaps if it would be appreciated if CEDA could actually also give us some detailed information on women. And what is being done. I think you have have done quite a bit, but I think we need to see a bit more. But I want to end by saying something quite positively, that some of the work that's being done is appreciated by the committee, but we would be also wanting to play a role in terms of how we can facilitate issues. I think in my constituency, I have quite a few upcoming workshops for DCI. And I would appreciate it if your officers could take my letters quite seriously, because we want people deployed to those areas. And it's now the year that we really need to deliver. So perhaps if that could be taken as a cue. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Chair, thank you very much. Wednesday,
when we had some of the other coaching institutions, we spoke about the question of, instead of people coming here and make long, drawn-out presentations, that the committee should engage institutions so that we can get set targets. While there's a lot on the program of CEDA, I haven't had a chance, unfortunately, so I haven't heard the presentation of some of them. I apologize. But where you have all this, I wouldn't say unnecessary, but long drawn out, we could have set targets. For this year, we're going to focus on those so many, and we reach that target in a particular period of time. That will be able, the committee will then be able to gauge and judge much better as to where the institutions are going. I also want to say that I have had some very positive interactions with CEDA in my constituency, and I'm extremely proud of you. I've had rapid responses. The only problem that I have, and this is a constructive comment, is that the lead time, you know, once you start engaging and when things are getting implemented, it's a serious problem. We're not dealing with national corporates, we're dealing with small business people that got no money, that cannot wait. But I must say, overall, and I'm talking about my own area, the responses were extremely positive. But it's just that little concern that one has. And also, we're also quite interested to know where the centers will be set up. Thank you very much.
When you say my own area, it means a lot to you, but it means nothing to them. They don't know you stay in Atlantis.
I'm sorry, my consistency is in Atlantis.
Thank you very much, Professor. And thank you very much to the presenters for giving us this outstanding presentation. But I just wanted to clarify myself on a few issues. CEDA. You talk about the national partnership. Now, I just wanted to know, how do you partner with these institutions or your partners? For instance, you have your national partnership as a Department of Provincial and Local Government. What is it that you are doing? Department of Agriculture. I know that in agriculture, they have MAFISA, they have the land bank, and then they have village banks, as well as cooperatives and so on. Now, how do you partner with this? And also, Babu Hasnain has talked about the CETAs. And the CETAs are known, well known for failure. If you can just elaborate on this, tell us what you are doing together with this institution. And the other thing is that these institutions have their own programs in place that deals with small businesses, like agriculture. They deal particularly with small farmers and so on. How do you then partner with those? And when you go to the international partners, what is their assistance? What is it that you are getting from them? Or what is it that they want from you and so on? As well as the financial institutions, the banks, what is your working relationship with the banks? And if I may ask another question I'm becoming slow these days. I think I'm becoming old.
Not old mentally. We are just mature.
Thank you, sir. Ubabu Hasnain has talked about the branches. If I look at your branches here, We have got 9 provincial offices, 51 branches, 90 enterprise information centers, 34 collocations arrangements, and 28 technology centers. How do you monitor these offices? How do they partner with banks and your international partners and national partners and international partners? Is it via the SIDA office in Pretoria, or you just tell them what is happening so that we know how these offices function? Because it's something else to set up an office, and this is something else to provide service to the sector that is in need. And maybe lastly, Chairperson, can you give us a list of your accredited training institutions and what kind of training do they give, as well as the geographic spread and the quality of training that they are giving to the people now on the ground? If we can have that, we can be very happy. And that is the last one to see that. To sum up, I just have 2 questions. I just wanted to sum up to explain on the definitions. You have this last one, AMCISA, the Alliance of Microfinance Institutions of South Africa. Just unpack this and tell us what. If you talk about the alliance, I don't know. I just want clarity on that one. What are you saying? What alliance is it? How do you work together? You know, we've got this tripartite alliance of the ANC. I know what it means. What are you saying here? Okay. Now the last one, Chairperson, would be again on the training issue. If I look at I peruse here, I see that you only train the financial institutions. I don't know whether I'm right or wrong. If you can clarify me on that. And on the strengthening of operational self-sufficiency, you talk about 50% operational cost. These are 50% program cost. If you can clarify us on that one, really, I think the operational cost, the program cost should be more than the operational cost. I don't know. That's how I think it should be. And you didn't give us the spread of the number of, you gave us the number of the financial institutions trained and supported. And then you didn't give us the spread of those, and the staff trained. You also give us the number, and you say the quality of training and support program is 100%. How do you measure this? What is your yardstick? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Prof. Chen, remember?
Yeah, thank you.
I say, Professor Chick.
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
The faster you speak, you leave them behind.
So I understand that. I try. And also because my brain is moving fast, you know. So many things I want to talk about. Sometimes it's I can't see it, not only you, only myself. Okay. You know, SIDA, if you identify the market to the people come to approach you, to provide you the skill training. You know, to identify the market is good enough. We all can identify the market, but how to get in? How to market it, you know, this is very difficult, you know. You know, I always say that, you know, in business you need a certain of the elements in the finance, marketing, knowledge, and management, you know. But finance, marketing, and all technologies, that is, you have to have it. Okay. And you know that nowadays, if you're talking about professional small business, if you come to approach CDA, I think that's the most easy one. If you're a dentist, or you're a small lawyer, or you're not a barber, the barber beauty, you know, that is, who has the skill, it is more simple. Because they're looking only for financials, you know, financials backup to set up their small business. But if anybody comes to you to set up some kind of business, a small industry, I think it's going to be very difficult. For one thing, I always say, at the moment, all our South African economy cannot be supporting, for one reason, the resource of raw material in this country is not there. Okay, we do have a lot of resources of material, but we don't use it. Most of industry at the moment, that is, we're using, you know, the industries, most of the material from outside. And it's too far away. You know, that is very heavy burden. And, you know, come here, I want to say that, you know, see that when you do these things, you know, looking on who you're going to train for the skill training, did you read the industry policy? Because, you know, my person is thinking the industry policy, and I was just to talk to the DG again. You know that the industry policy is one thing, I think, in the long run, the long term for our country, the industry we have to build up. I personally believe is jewelry industry. Right? And, you know, because we have, you know, gold, we have London, so we have all the things in our country. And, you know, at the moment we ask for them, most of them low. But, you know, in other countries they will protect them. And, you know, we don't have any skilled people at the moment, not enough people at the moment. I do believe our industry policy, we do have to forecast to see, you know, maybe on the 15 years after from now, or from now, is going to make South Africa to be the center of the jewelry exporters, no? In the whole world, and with the material in our sphere. Okay, and we have to look at all these minor things, you know. So if that is the industry policy we have, then the CDA, you do training. What you have to training is you must look into training the people starting to do how to cut the diamond, how to make a jewelry, and it's not going to happen overnight. You know, that's what I'm saying, maybe 10 to 15 years, you know, we can be there. That is, I really think that if our government, I say, we put a lot of effort trying to build up, you know, the industries, okay? But, you know, whatever we do now, our raw material is going out, and the industry here is dying because too far away from the raw materials, all right? If you are not in the financial standing enough, then you cannot carry the heavy, the raw material cost. And also because it's far away, the due times, a lot of buyers doesn't want it. So what I'm thinking, you know, before we reach that, you know, I really, really want the CDA and the DG, you know, think about, you know, the trade, our policies in the long run, if that is going to be, maybe we can, you know, create some job, a lot of institutions to start, to help them, you know, to come to encourage them to our country here, starting to, you know, to give a lot of lessons to our young generation, you know, in this year, you know, about the house, you know, like I said, you know, the all these jewelry things, all right? And, but I think that is now, as for now, that is what I really want to say. Okay, I think I'll finish it. Thank you.
Professor Chang, thank you very much. You observed the speed limit. You are very audible and clear. Everybody was able to follow you. In fact, I might thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I'm on the industrial development in the various provinces. And I just want to know, because I see the percentage allocated to FN or either 30 FN and rural. This one of 30 FN or FN is far much bigger than the rural. I just want to know if whether you are really, you know, in recognizance with the policy of the ruling party, because we want to bridge the gap between urban and rural. And if when you are allocating more or less funds to develop the rural, it means that you are broadening the gap. Then I just want to know what criteria has or either was used, you know, to determine which what you call the percentage. Another one I just want to know is whether you have a medium-term strategy. If yes, could you just tell us more about it? Third, how many industries and projects of women, youth, and disabled are established in townships and rural areas? Let me check. Last, how do you assist the illiterate people and poor people who are living in townships and rural areas? Those who have no resources at all to access information from rural branches. Do you have foot soldiers to go around in the community to inform them about CETA, or you just depend on media? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Comrade CETA.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, let me also echo my appreciation of the work done by both agencies. Recently, a training session for not less than 10 cooperatives, I'm not sure to speak about some of them, was facilitated through CETA. My constituency and an adjacent constituency. That's just one example of the keenness and the cooperation that's unfolding between the agencies and us, and I trust and hope will encourage other MPs to do so, and it reinforces as well what Professor Turok has said, that the parliamentary constituency offices are an asset, they're a resource, they're not just an office for the public to go and submit complaints and it ends there. Just a few things regarding some aspects. With regard to the high failure rate of funded institutions, I know they may have made reference to it, but it's just how the information was presented. The question is how much capacitation, even in terms of money, you think, particularly in terms of money, because there is a plan to do compensation, is being planned there. Moving towards the aim to increase the microfinancing through wholesale funding, once again, just let me reinforce Professor Chang's point around the compliance to the Industrial Policy Action Plan. Just as a comment, the other agencies, the coaching group, some of them were very, very vocal and expressive about how they linked their planning now in the context of IPAP. Just as a matter of interest, on your management of portfolio, managing the portfolio quality, if you could help us with some international comparisons, because I know the BRI in Indonesia it had an extremely high repayment rate of not less than 80%. I'm not saying that you are at that level, but just as a comment so that you can see what are you targeting, what can you do to support that. I want to reinforce Umanduli's ratio around 50% operational cost with certain program costs, and I hope Sidisa will take into account that, because I'm sure we'll monitor it in each and every agency. Maybe at the start, because we are unpacking, we are rolling out, but it's really, the ratio is rather too high. The send-off planning, is it a concept, is it a program, is it going to be a fiscal facility? If you could share details, not now, share it with you. And this is around the facility that is for me to do that. It seems you're presenting quite a brilliant proposal that's worth supporting, not just commending. If you could also explain a little bit the risk improvement from level 1 to level 2. The turnaround on application to disbursement, you said it's 96, you commented it's going down to, it's down to 88, but what's the ideal and what's the target in this year? Let's look at the partnerships now. One would have assumed we had regional and international partners, and the microfinancing has got its history, and also FIDA has set an example of how to work with partners. I'm sure some of us would draw a lesson from that. Just as the last point on some of our definitely on behalf of the constituents when I'm deployed, place an invitation to all MPs in housing for a workshop on the 12th of April. It's a joint workshop between the constituency office, Land CPO, and some of housing. I think that's what Professor Turok was emphasizing, but of course, we still have to see the results thereafter. Let me come to FIDA. If you just bear with me, I just want to work out my ages. I'll be fast.
I'm bearing with you. You are closing on the husband is time. But I'm bearing with you. Find your pages.
FIDA associate on the Small Enterprise Agencies Forum. It's not that clear. And also, I think it's worth commending that we think that there's a responsiveness to state of mission address, the fact that the hotline payment service has been established. The coordinating support measures, with particularly focuses on municipalities. Now, the question is which one and what's the nature of support there? On partnerships, I see GCIS is not put in there. And as a comment, it's helpful that, or it's quite a good thing that FIDA is partnered with National Productivity Institute. What comes into mind is the Business Rescue Initiative that is being introduced through the Reviewer of the Companies Act. And I trust and hope that there'll be a hawk's eye to check on that. But also, it would be helpful if down the line the CEDA could share with us any samples of the work that they are doing with the National Productivity Institute per se. On international partners, I don't see India there. And also, is there any reason why we do not have any partners in Africa? In the CDAC technology program. I also once again, just to re-emphasize the ease of compliance of resonating to the industrial policy action plan, particularly due to the need that we should ensure that there's the improvement of our technological capacity. And on this instance, once again, Chair, I see this unit is claiming, you know, quite a visible improvement from the previous, and therefore I propose that we arrange, if it's possible, sometime within the year, a one-day oversight visit within Western Cape to see the good work they are doing. Maybe we can pick up a few some of the beneficiaries once again. Lastly, Chair, let me just reinforce and echo what some of my colleagues have said. You see, GTI, one of GTI's strategic objectives is to broaden participation, ensure equity, as well as redress historical and current distortions in our economy. Unfortunately, this is the way some of the structures its plan. It's really business as usual. I sense, I don't want to think on their behalf, is that they are cautious because they're not going to get funding. We've said this a couple of times. If there's any other reason, they will share it with us. And I'm one of the people who's actually highlighting and emphasizing that not only SAMAP and CEDA, but SAMAP in particular, but the rest of the COTE financing institutions should accelerate their program. And in this instance, it's acceleration of the microfinancing program. And if need be, let us write a formal letter of concern to the cabinet through the speaker or whatever, just to express our uneasiness. This is a recurring gesture. We've raised this before, and here it is once again. It's being raised, it's being handled. Some of it still coming with something that does not articulate business unusual, unfortunately. Chair, I will stop there. Thanks very much.
Where I've said to Professor Cheng, she must watch the speed limit. I'm going to encourage you also to watch the speed limit, to add speed. You surpassed Mr. Hasman, you took the whole 11 minutes. But the points are valid, and the question is that if we are to get proper justice from the presenters, we must also have the stamina to listen to them. Mayor Rams? That is Mayor Ramudive. Outside the meeting, I call her Mayor Rams, but. Mera.
Thank you, Chair. Very interesting, you know, because I think when you say that we have to reduce speed there and add it here. Okay, on a serious note, you know, it's for very disadvantage, you know, to arrive late in a meeting because you just don't get an opportunity to listen to all the presentations. But ever since, and my apologies, we attended the women's, you know, in Edison this morning. I must say that, you know, I was also going to emphasize on the fact that I think when the president said that it's not a business as usual, I think he was looking at a time that, you know, after 14 years in government, the majority of our people are still in poverty. You know, they're still living in poverty. And the rich getting richer, those poor people are getting more poor. Hence that statement from the president, that perhaps we should change our style of, you know,
trying to achieve our this objective of trying to bridge the gap, you know, from the first and the second economy, because I think that's what he meant. And the chair, it's a comment to say that perhaps in future we'll also be able to get, you know, from these institutions as to how many people have been graduated, you know, ever since we started. Graduated from being survivalists to SMMEs, from SMMEs to bigger companies. Because as long as we don't do this, I don't see how we are really going to be able to bridge this gap. That was my comment. And most of the questions, I think, they have been raised by my colleagues, especially also the one relating to women. If CEDA in future can be able to disaggregate, you know, in terms of sex and types of, you know, the jobs that these women are doing. And also, Chair, I think the other factor that is actually important, especially in OGA, I'm speaking to both the presenters, to say monitoring is very important in terms of ensuring that, you know, our efforts are being realized, and your efforts as the institution. Thank you, Chair.
Comrade Mayor Amadile, thank you. Good folks, an opportunity to be presented for a rejoinder. You've got a very heavy basket full of questions and very pertinent comments. First of the block,
okay, thank you, sir. I'm trying to speak in a voice that is going to be a little bit better than last time. I'm going to hand over to the Chief Operating Officer to answer the question on provincial performance management activism, knowing all corners of him and the turnaround time. Then I'll take over the other questions.
Thank you very much. With regard to the issue of monitoring of performance, we do have systems in place that do monitor the performance of the provincial managers throughout the country. First, Chair, what we have is the performance management system where we set targets for each and every manager for them to reach. And then following on that, there are monthly reports that are submitted to the Chief Operating Officer's office. And also we do have the executive committee, which also receives those reports and reviews them from time to time. In addition to that, Chair, both the Office of the CEO and the Office of the COO do visit the provinces to just double check and monitor also what is happening on the ground, and verify some of the information and validate it as well. In addition to that, Chair, we also have a system in place where on annual basis or even quarterly, we do visit and meet with the financial intermediaries just to interact with them, to find out what are the issues, to get the comments on our service provision, and to allow them to get some, you know, to interact with us in terms of policy, the products, the services that we are giving them, so that we must continuously improve. Okay. I need to indicate that if there are any deficiencies that have been identified in terms of our service delivery approach, we would greatly want to hear about that so that we must continuously improve on that share. With regard to the issue of turnaround times, which has been mentioned by various honorable members, our target for the current financial, the coming financial year, which is starting in 2 weeks' time or so, is that we, from the day that an intermediary applies to SAMAF for possible funding up to the time when we sign the contract and make the first disbursement to them. That process should take 96 days. However, like the CEO has indicated, before we even start with that commitment, we have reviewed that in a few days ago, and we have made that 88 days. So for the coming financial year, this is the target that we want to reach. After that, the next coming financial year, we want to reduce that to 80 days. And the third year, we want to reduce that to 60 days as we improve capacity within the institutions, the skills of our staff member, and we begin to get confidence also in terms of our operational activities as an institution. So those are the targets for the next 3 years. The last year, we hope to be at 60, which we hope will be an optimum period for us to respond on. The other issue that the CEO requested me to respond on is the issue of training. As it has been indicated, we've got two broad types of institutions that we are supporting at SAMAF, the financial services cooperatives and the microfinance institutions. Now, predominantly, our training program focuses on the financial services cooperatives because they are of such a nature that they are in the deep rural areas. They display the fear skills capacity and you know, the also the kind of people who are attracted by these intermediaries or institutions either people with standard 10 or standard 9. So really, as we know, the most difficult people always move towards the city. So in the rural areas, we do have this lack of skills in this particular institution. So where do our program in terms of training go? We target three levels within the institution. Number one, Chair, we look at the board of the financial intermediaries. We ensure that we provide them with good governance training skills. We focus on things like business, things like running the meeting, you know, looking at the, assisting them to develop a plan for the institution, interpreting the performance of the institution so that they must interact effectively and meaningfully with management to give them the policy direction. The other area that we look at is the level of management of the management level now within these institutions. In terms of management, we train them in financial management courses so that we ensure that they effectively and efficiently manage the loan book. We ensure that we train them in customer relations for them to interact effectively also with their clients. We do marketing courses. We also do courses on the legislation so that we've got to acquaint them and familiarize them with the latest legislation that pertain to the running of their particular institutions. For instance, like the Cooperative Act, like the NCA, and the requirements of the NCR. So these are the kind of things that we focus on. At the staff level, we teach staff in terms of how to manage the loan book, issues of delinquency, mobilizing savers, recruiting new members to come to the institution, because for this institution to become financially viable and sustainable, they need to have a lot of members. This is one of the critical challenges that we have in the microfinance industry. Another area, Chair, in terms of institutional capacity building, we also assist this institution to develop policies, systems, and procedures. Policies in terms of savings, mobilization policy, credit management policy, human resource policy, and other related systems and procedures within the institution in terms of how to disperse a loan and track it until a person pays. So the whole idea here is to develop that strong institutional capacity to ensure that they manage their loan portfolio effectively and efficiently, and number two, that they're in a position to sustain themselves over the next coming years, so that when SAMAF is no more there, they must still continue to exist. I hope I've touched on everything.
Thank you. That leads me to the question by Honorable Professor Ben Turok on the high failure rate and the emergency strategy. Our emergency strategy has been that most of the, firstly, the analysis is that most of the high failure rate happens in the FSC, which are located basically more in the
rural areas, and we accept the point that some of them which got funding from us, there was no tight assessment and evaluation that was properly done. So we accept that. So what we've done is to tighten now our credit assessment, our appraisal system, our due diligence, and we say our managers must go and continuously support and develop them to meet the criteria that at least we want. That's the first thing. The second thing is we've got in-house training for also even for our staff to develop their own skills of assessing the business and the standardization of reporting, so that they should know which key indicators of assessment that they should look at in an institution. The third thing is we've now appointed, because we found that the crisis also is on the financial reporting. We've looked at their financial reporting systems and we've decided to respond by appointing some of the service providers that are financial literate, not your chartered accounting firms or your chartered accountants, just the bookkeepers who've got become degrees and got experience in production of books. And we've deployed them to all the financial services corps now, so that one, they assist them to produce proper books of accounts; two, they transfer the skills and set up the reporting system, whether those reporting systems are still manual or computerized; but thirdly, then to make sure that they train these managers and the managers of the co-ops to actually be able themselves to produce the book. That has been our response, our crisis strategy response. Then the point on the center of learning. The center of learning is not necessarily, it's not a concept. It's a strategy, but it's a medium-term strategy. We, in the medium-term strategy, we're not saying that we'll realize it by end of this year. It's part of the strategic goals that we want to realize within the next 3 years. We think that is quite important, because one of some of the best practices that we've seen in other countries, Germany, South America, and Asia, we've seen that the microfinance sector does set up its own, linking up with certain universities, set up its center of academy, an academy, and produces best practice skill set in microfinance development. So that's exactly where we want to go. So it's a strategy in the medium term. We will not achieve it this year, but we will achieve it in the next year, if we get the support that the honorable members is going to help us to achieve. Then the issue of examinations and supervision, or the issue of the bank-sitter relationship. What we've done is, in terms of our strategic relationship, we understand the weaknesses and the strengths in terms of synergies that we want to get in a relationship. So what we've done with bank-sitter is to say, let's work on a pilot project in some provinces, in Mpumalanga and Limpopo, and we're training about 6 financial intermediaries there on their own training that is accredited, to test whether that training does create proficiencies that we want on the ground. So that's how we've done, rather than setting the training by Benfica all over the country, because we have not assessed the quality of it. I think the issue of budget allocation is something that how we allocate our budget in terms of operations and programs. We said our target is 50% this year, 50-50. The reason is that, as the Honorable MP Stellana said, we are at an initial stage. I mean, we are only in the second year of our formation. So there's a lot of establishment costs, for instance, the setting up provinces, acquiring systems for us to support, which are quite expensive. But if you look at the allocation, you find that we use 50%, 48% for transfer to organizations, which is our program cost, and then 50% for operations. But if you relook at that 50% for operations, it's not necessarily for operations, it's for our salaries. It's operations which include
internal in-house training of our staff, which is actually you can allocate to a capital cost. And also it includes acquisition of systems for us to report, where, you know, so that we have accurate reports that we provide. It is also a capital expense. So that split is not necessarily 50 in terms of real operational cost, but the transfer to organization is 50%, but then the other cost is 50%. The rollovers, yes, we will have some rollovers because of the nature of our business. But if we look at the trend, last year our rollover was, when we started, there was a rollover of 50 million. And then last year we reported a rollover of 31 million. And this year we'll report a rollover of about 22, 23 million. Mm-hmm. The reason is that once we approve funding, we've got a contract with that particular institution. So we can't withdraw them the funds because it's a contractual relationship. So we've got to ask for these funds that we've already approved for institutions, which they are going to draw down, to request that they be rolled over because they belong to those institutions. It's just that we have not dispersed those monies because we are managing also the disbursement risk here. And then the issue of the 6% women borrowers is correct. That is the information we have. It's quite true. And then the huge staff turnover. I think perhaps the confusion here is that when we started last year, we had, that is 2006-2007, we had a number of provincial managers and staff that were employed on contract. So when we recruited permanent staff, some of those members did not get the job. And so it could have then created a sense of a high turnover. However, actually, in a sense, we've only had two staff recognitions, basically, the permanent staff. So if you compare two people with actually 52 that we have, perhaps that's not necessarily a high staff turnover. That's our view. The vacancy rate of 23% that we have, we continuously close that gap. But what we've done is to really look at the structure strategy fit and to say, do we really have to have these functions and fill them? If we fill these positions and these functions that are defined here, are we going to achieve what we want to achieve? So what we've done is to temper with our organizational structure and review and did some job evaluation, specify the jobs quite correctly and the function, and then so that we can then recruit faster. We continue to recruit people, but we've created some functions that are critical for the organization to continue. So we are very confident that once that revised organizational structure is approved, we will fill all those functions because they are quite relevant for driving the strategy of the company, of the fund. AMFISA is just a lobby group of an alliance of microfinance institutions in South Africa. They are financial intermediaries that decided to come as a group and became a lobby group. And so they are just a sounding board to us. And it's part of the people that we continuously engage with. And they give us feedback, and they benchmark us, and they measure us. They tell us that you're not doing the right thing, and we also tell them that, but you're not accounting for the funds that we're giving you. It's kind of like a relationship of that nature. So it's not an alliance, not a political alliance. It's just themselves calling themselves an alliance of microfinance associations. I think let me just quickly jump into. I've spoken about the high failure rate. How much capacity building has been allocated? If we look at our medium term framework, we are saying 13.5 million failures for on lending, but almost 30 million of that is in addition, is for capacity building for subsidizing operational costs, because we believe these institutions, especially these ones that are more in the rural areas, where there's infrastructure problems, they need, and where there's capacity problems, they need more of this capacity. So we will be expending almost close to 30 million for capacity building, but 13.5 million for on lending at the moment, and that's how we've allocated.
the portfolio quality of and compared to BRI, the recovery rate of 80%. BRI is almost a, I think currently it's almost a 50-60-year-old institution, because it started in the early 70s to subsidize agricultural inputs and all. So they have gone through all the waves of you know, their recovery is going up and down until they set a benchmark of about 80%. We know now that they have improved from that 80% to almost close to 90%, but it took them about 40 years to do that. So we think that at the second year of our operation, when we put ourselves at 50% recovery rate, we're already setting up a good standard for ourselves to be at almost 80%. In fact, our medium-term framework says will be by the end of the third 3 years will be around 85-90% of the medium-term strategy. The risk management improvement from level 1 to 2, what we've done is to have a risk management assessment that has been done by a professional company, which is a Chartered Accounting firm, and they've assessed and they found that in terms of risk management, we are still at level 1. And we didn't have a tracking register. So we want to improve that risk management level to 2, but the best practice is about 4. So we want to improve every year.
Sorry, Chair, if there could be an explanation, what does level 1, 2 mean?
This level, okay, there's first a level called a novice level, which means zero, which is a level that says you have so much risk that you have not identified in your company, both strategic and operational risk in the whole company. The total company assessment risk is a risk assessment. It could be risk that you don't have a control on, but you need to mitigate. For instance, for some of it could be risk that we are a trading entity and there are certain things we can't do. For instance, we can't receive funding from outside and structure that funding and hear that funding in order to make sure that we improve our service. It could be a lot of things, it's qualitative risk and quantitative risk, it's operational risk and strategic risk. So what the company did was to say, actually, you are at risk level 1.70 or something, that's what they said. But you need to be at risk level 4 if you want to be a best practice institution that manages its own risk, that everybody who is running the business, right from the outreach officer, knows exactly which risk, whether it's reputation risk in the company, whether it's the turnaround times that the Honorable Mr. Hartman was talking about, because that's a reputation risk, to say applications have come, but it has taken us 9 months to respond. That's a reputation risk. So those are some of the risks that have been assessed, and we've been assessed to be at level 1. So we want to improve those risks, improve turnaround time, reputation risk, and all those things. Now, okay, I think the international partners is something that we've not focused on quite extensively, because we are at an early stage of setting up this fund, and we believe that firstly, let us have our systems running, let us understand our business internally. So deliberately, we have this internally focused strategic assessment of our business so that everybody understands what it is, and then we will have this externally focused strategy that says, okay, now we know the business. If the CEO talks somewhere, people will accept to that business because systems are there, people understand. And then we start to go externally and say, this is what we do, how do we do it? And so that the partnership has got synergy, because it's difficult to have partnerships when you can't deliver even on your core business. You have to demonstrate that you've got value, deliver on your business, and partners that partner you see this value, that by partnering you, they are getting the value that they want to get. I think I'm just going to be finished now. I think I'm through with you.
Thank you very much. And I must say that your voice has not affected the good profession. He's very much awake. You are even whispering to some ladies here behind him. Okay. you are next.
Thank you, Chair. I will share some of the questions with my colleagues, and I'm sure Candice Kubev will talk on the NPI relationship. But just a very quick, I know Professor Turok was just making a comment in the first instance, but I just want to share our own experience and then in the 3 years of our existence with how big the need is. We have identified three sets of needs. The first type of need is what Professor Teng was referring to, which is your people who are easy to support. They will be looking for information. They can get into a website. They can actually help themselves in many ways. So all they need is certain instruments to help them. The second set of needs is people who, to some extent, have identified an opportunity and want to start a business, but you will need to work with them for a while for them to be successful. So it's not an issue of just interacting with them one day and leave them. So it's a long process that needs a different response in terms of the program. The third level, which is what I believe we really have not started doing, and it really needs an institution that can be bold, is the level where there is a potential and opportunity for people, but there is no way that they can really start and grow the enterprise themselves. They need an institution that's gonna actually almost do it for them, with them. Here I'm talking about this rural enterprise development program I'm talking about. You could have a community that has got access to particular opportunities, and maybe there is already some work that's currently going on. I can give an example of what our OR Tambo District Grant is doing. They are partnering with the Development Bank of South Africa, and they have identified a project which will run over a period of about 12 years, because when you work with those communities, you have to work over time. And this is where they're helping these communities to produce a high-quality product that can really be sold even on export markets. The project is called Sakisindu. We can give information about that. But if you're going to do that, you have to be able to work with those communities without a lot of restriction, both regulatory and capacity-wise, because you have to go deep into that. And I think a part of what CIDA Technology is doing is really that, because they provide a total solution. It's an extensive program, but it does deliver results. So I just wanted to indicate that this is really our experience, and obviously that is one area that would need a lot of attention and support going forward. In terms of the question about the Indian model, to what extent are we working with them, or maybe is it a solution we can look into? Again, I think what we are learning from the Indian counterpart, we actually have a formal relationship with the Indian CIDA counterpart, which is called National Small Scale Industry Corporation. There are a number of differences. There are differences in terms of policy. There are differences in terms of how the whole small business support of government is organized, and therefore how that institution operates. But what we see is that they are actually very bold. They will go out, they have programs like the similar one that Charles referred to. They also have some of these programs where they go into a community, help set up, actually almost give a turnkey project to some of the entrepreneurs. So that is really what we are finding with that learning. And we are using that approach in terms of setting up this procurement support program, in terms of setting up what we call procurement hubs. There's a lot of information you can give around that. This is our response to the set aside. As I indicated, it's one thing to say you will open opportunities for small business, but you have to help them to actually deliver on those opportunities. And that includes issues like the one that was raised on supporting with materials, raw materials, technology, machinery, training. So it's a total package that is required for that. In terms of the insurance support for startup SMMEs, I am aware that Kula has got some instrument that addresses that, but as CIDA we don't have because we don't give financial support. In terms of the learning center, I think this question also came to us. What we are talking about here, we do currently have a learning center which is responsible for training our business advisors and all the people who are dealing directly with the entrepreneur. But in this case, we are saying why we call it academy is that it's not going to focus on CIDA staff only. It's also going to train our partners, other SME agents, because they have asked us to support that. We are currently doing training, for instance, for Red Dog in the Western Cape around our instruments. The last question before I hand over to Charles to talk about some of the questions on the technology centers is how do we monitor our provinces? I think it's one of the issues that is also worrying us to say, do we know exactly what is happening in each province? Currently, we have a department that is called Network Operations, which is responsible for that. It has monthly meetings with all the provinces and branches. And also on a quarterly basis, we meet the provincial managers. But over and above that, we also have a unit that is doing what we call auditing, where people actually go out and even call the people who have received support from CIDA. Increasingly, we believe we should shift that responsibility also to the provincial manager so that it becomes one of the key performance areas of the provincial manager, because that's why they are there, to support the whole network.
And who would wonder that the provincial manager?
Thanks, Mr. Hasman. The provincial managers are currently monitored by the executive manager responsible for network operations. That's his role, to ensure that the operations in the province are working well. So he monitors the provincial managers, and the provincial managers monitor the branch managers. What we have done to actually improve that, because we also identified it as an area that needs further work, we are submitting to the board a new structure, which will also make sure that we have what we call quality controllers. Those are people who would only look at what the brand is doing on a daily basis and make sure that the quality of what is done by the brand is what is expected. It doesn't necessarily mean having employing new people, but it's redirecting some of the capacity we currently have. And those people will maybe address two provinces, and then that is the work that they will be focusing on. So I will leave it at that before I go to other questions and just hand over to my two colleagues to talk on the area.
Thanks,
Wawa.
The portfolio committee members would have seen on the slide in the budget that CIDA Technology probably gets one of the smallest budgets of most of the DPI programs. And if we were to look at our business, you'd see that if we were to continue with business usual or normal, it would be very difficult for us to launch new centers, which is why it's very important that we go into partnership with other organizations, so that we can leverage each other's competencies to have bigger impact. For example, the China University of Technology that came to be our strategic partner in launching our next manufacturing technology demonstration center, where they provide basically the building and a lot of the other support services that are going to need it, particularly from the engineering faculty of that university, to assist the businesses. In Port Elizabeth, the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro Nelson Mandela Bay Municipality has also helped us there with the different ICT incubators, one of the different with the ICT incubator we have in that province. Likewise, in the platinum sector, The Platinum Trust of South Africa is working with our Platinum Incubator in Rustenburg, basically to help overcome one of the biggest obstacles that small businesses have, and that's gaining access to the metal itself. So they give what they call a loan fund, where you get a piece of metal and you start, you get trained on it. We have a strategic partnership between us, Orbit College, and the Platinum Trust of South Africa, where CSIR is actually not involved in that specific initiative. But Orbit College, the Platinum Trust, and us as CEDA, we working effectively creating an environment where people with limited skills get on-the-job training from a real business perspective, in the sense that they get the technical skills and then the business development skills that goes around once you've got, once you've started creating metals, whether you get the design from someone else or you get it according to spec from another service provider, you produce the metal and you are able to sell it, and you understand, you get training on the full spectrum. And that is a policy issue that we're busy grappling with within CEDA at the moment, particularly on the agriculture industry. We're trying to say, let's focus on in the first stages, especially when you're dealing with relatively limited skills, let's build a productive platform. That is, getting up an essential oils farm or getting up a sugar farm or even a soya or whatever it is, start learning by doing, and then start refining and mastering the art of running a business independent of a service provider such as CEDA Technology helping you along. That has been one of our core focuses in all the centers we've been dealing with, because in many instances the training levels of individuals are quite limited, and in our aluminium, copper, zinc, brass, metals processing incubators, we first focus on the training side of the business and then on moving from there. Once the people understand it and operate in an environment where they produce products to spec that are set by somebody else, we then start encouraging them to move into producing products themselves for different markets and to sell it themselves into different markets. And in that regard, the incubators themselves work directly with those entrepreneurs at building their own markets, initially heavily supported by the incubator, but later on getting into doing it themselves. As far as women are concerned, we are, all our incubators have a strong mandate around supporting women-owned businesses, and it ranges. In our Tambali flower incubator, the floriculture incubator, we've got about 88% representation. And these are women who are, were previously, most of them, rural farm labourers, are now owning units, production units, producing flowers of world-class quality and selling them, and selling those flowers throughout the South African market. Maybe one of the things of the rand falling maybe means that we'll be opening up our Dutch market again, as it happened 3 years ago. But I don't want to encourage the rand in any way to fall further down. The representation of women on businesses, as I said, ranges from about 88% in Zimbabwe down to 10% in our ICT incubators. And in each instance there, again, they have special KPIs around encouraging students in particular, post-grad students, female post-grad students, to turn their research ideas into businesses within the incubation environment. The slide up on the board shows you where the bulk of the, well, where our incubators are currently located. And one of the things that that caused me and the CEDA board a lot of stress is the fact that we have a huge representation of incubators in Gauteng. I think it's also reflective of the fact that 50% of all small enterprises in South Africa are located in the Gauteng province. But we have a strong program, and to answer your question, ma'am, with the new incubators in particular, we're going to be trying to target the provinces where we don't have representation, and in particular, the poorer provinces. One of the newest incubators we're going to be bringing online is in the Eastern Cape, where the IPOP says that as part of the forestry initiative for the Eastern Cape, we need to encourage the creation of an incubator there, and we'll be launching one within the middle of this year in the furniture manufacturing sector. And certainly, the industrial policy document will be guiding us in terms of where we're going to be placing the new incubators. But that is an item that our board committee, which is headed by the DTI, will be providing direction to STP on. I think one of the messages I would like to bring across is that partnerships really do make a difference for CEDA technology and certainly for CEDA as a whole, because that's how we leverage each other's competencies. Let me give you an example. With our floriculture incubator and many of our other agriculture-based incubators, not many, all the other agriculture-based incubators in Mpumalanga, MADC, the Mpumalanga Agricultural Development Corporation, has almost got 100% approval rate of loans to, that working capital loans to the incubatees of our incubators, because they've almost got a guarantee on their loan, because they know the intensive package of services they get from an STP-supported incubator means that that client of theirs has a high probability of surviving. And certainly you saw that one slide of mine where I said that 90% of our businesses have survived up to the second year operating independently. I think I've covered all the questions from my side.
Thank you, sir. I'm requested by the CEO to take the question on the relationship that we have with the National Productivity Institute in South Africa. We entered into this relationship with them sometime in 2007 through an MOU, a structured MOU, in which it was agreed that we would train nationally 3,500 monitor prices on concepts of productivity to improve their operations and by so doing to improve the survival as well as profitability of those institutions. I think we have done to date about 2,000 nationally of those institutions. We'll do the rest of them before the end of this calendar year. But I'm happy to say that to the portfolio committee that most of those small enterprises that have been through this productivity institute program of the productivity South Africa, they've improved their operations quite efficiently. We talk about time wastage. We're talking about time management, we're talking about operations efficiency of the business itself. We did an assessment about 2 weeks ago where we're looking in terms of what is it that it really benefits the monitor prices. We look at 2 months, for example, we look at January and February. We realize that for that month, nationally, for those assessed as monitor prices that have gone through this course of the improvement of productivity, they've saved or put into the process of the business is about 43 million rand. That is not looking at the entire people that have been running this program with them, but only for the last 2 months. So it far exceeds the investment that they have done on this particular program. So we're hoping that by the end of the period of this program, we'll take stock in terms of what has been achieved to date, and also how much has small enterprises received in terms of profitability as well as money to their own pockets through the experiences that they got through this particular program. So it's quite a useful program. Some operations, for example, in the Northwest, one when the prices were producing pots and 8 pots a day, 3 legged pots, black pots. Pots has gone through this program. He's now producing about 15 of those pots, which is quite a high output on a particular period which these pots have been produced. I think also let me take the question that was raised by one of the honorable members on the relationship with the banks. There was a concern initially when we presented this concept about a year ago or so that we need to be careful in that particular area. But I'm happy to say that it's proving to be a good outcome that we're getting out of it. For example, with APSA, they began to co-locate with us in 7 of the CEDA branches. There's an APSA person in a CEDA branch that advises a small business that is coming here to get some CEDA services and at the same time seeking to seek finance from APSA. So there's a person who looks at the application and vets it before it goes to the bank itself. By the time it reaches the credit committee of the bank, it's been looked after by somebody within a CEDA operation. So it stands a good chance of success because it's been looked after by an APSA person in our branches.
So we've got a similar exercise with the FNB as well as Standard Bank. FNB in particular, they've got a program called Biz Network, where they bring together small enterprises and talk about a range of issues relating to business operations. So see they're going to be tapping into that. So this is a structure that they have with the banks. It's quite useful, but especially at the local level where things are happening. The question of what we have done to date on the hotline, I think I must talk to that one, which is, of course, we have taken it as a national priority in CEDA, amongst other projects that we are going to undertake in this particular financial year. What we have done, we work very closely, of course, with the TDI in this project. They are also very interested to see what is happening, what we are going to do. We have put together a team of people within CEDA that looks into this issue in terms of how it should be set up, how it should be run. One of the key things that we have realized that before we can move on this particular project, we need to put a strong business case. And that spells out all the details that need to be taken into consideration and how the hotline service is going to operate within CEDA. So we are reporting to EPSCO on a regular basis on the program, on the progress that we are doing in this regard. So we have also engaged the services of the external parties, people who help to understand how the hotline issue works, people who have got any knowledge, just to share experiences with us in terms of what works and what doesn't work, with a view that once we have put together a strong business case, we'll be calling for proposals to outside institutions to come and bid for that business. And then, of course, we'll take the data that shows that they have got the experience and knowledge of how to put this service for us and work with us with CEDA. We're looking at a number of scenarios that have been suggested to us. Scenarios that would entail of one of the issues of building the service from scratch as CEDA or outsourcing the service, but with measure of control within CEDA. But whatever we'll be doing, whatever we'll be taking in terms of those options, will be guided by one thing and one thing only, that is time constraint. We need to be up and running with the service as much as quickly as possible. But there is significant progress that we can register now with regard to this. We'll put a time frame and say by the end of May at least, we should have something up and running in terms of the hotline service. But we want to ensure that we do everything right, follow the procurement processes, as well as ensure that we pick up the right service partner that can help us in this regard. But I think we'll keep on increasing the portfolio committee members in this regard, increase the board members in terms of what we're doing with in this particular area. But I think we are on top of our course. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I actually just realized from the questions that we would need a longer interaction with the committee members, because there is quite a lot that is happening in the organization. Here we had to cut in 10 minutes what we are actually doing. We are not even touching on what individual scientists are doing in their local environment. So it is a bit challenging. In fact, this was recognized also by the board that they need to even understand CEDA projects even more. They have extended the time of looking into these matters into a full day to start and appreciating that. So I'm just indicating that we would welcome the opportunity to engage more on the project. There was a question by Mr. Kasmin on quality of service providers. It's one of the areas that keeps us awake at night, because that is a reputation risk for CEDA. You will notice that we have actually reduced the number of service providers. We targeted a large number in the beginning, just trying to see what is out there. And the reality is that not everybody can provide the quality we need. But we realize that we cannot just throw our hands in the air and say there's nothing we can do, because in the Small Business Amendment Act, we actually are required to build the capacity of service providers so that we have a system where small businesses can get help even without us as CEDA. So we are doing a lot of that training currently, and we are getting this quality and very, very zealously. There was an issue about the Freiburg Southern District branch, and I think this is where the members of the committee can assist. And I think this comment also goes for Professor Turok. The Western Cape branch, the setup in the Western Cape only came very late in our system. I think we started establishing that by November, late last year. But I will take the details around that question and make sure that we respond to that. We will take you up on that offer. That is the only way we can improve our outreach, is to work with the members. And we thank those who have used our facilities to reach out to the constituencies. I think I touched on the issue of monitoring branch activities, and Tandile has touched on the hotline. Just to say that part of the challenge with the hotline is that we have to look at all angles. There's an element of investigation in it, because when somebody calls, you have to test if what they are saying is true before you can actually take that up. We also have to have a system of interacting with all the different government departments and know who is responsible in each department so that they can respond. So that's what needs this total solution and packaging, and we need to do it well. Currently, those calls are just coming, and we are not going out to advertise the service, because when we start getting the influx of the calls, we might not be able to deal with some of these areas. So we deal with them as they come, and where we can, we pass them over. Some are passed on to public protector, and some of them were solved by talking to that particular department, but it's not properly organized. So this is what we will do, and we can assure the committee that that comprehensive system would be up and running by May. In terms of the incubators, I think Charles has spoken to that and where they will be. And I really do want to make an apology about not disaggregating the information. We would be able to forward it to our parliamentary officers, aggregating it for women. We have a certain program actually that we're doing with MOGE, which is an NGO supporting people with disabilities. And there are very encouraging stories that come out of that. We would share that information also. And with Mr. Oliphant, he raised the issue of the lead time. And I really welcome this question, because it's also one of the challenges we have. When I spoke about the learning center, I was talking about the technical capacity of SIDA to support small business. Currently, we are using business advisors, and they can only see so many people a day. And that limits our capacity to actually promptly respond to small business needs. Now, one of the things we are proposing in our plan is to have a cadet program, which has been budgeted for in the budget, where we also take young people who are able to understand business and train them as information officers and so on, so they can actually start doing some of the work that doesn't need an experienced business advisor. So that would be one way of addressing that. Also, we have a program that we are partnering with a Brazilian counterpart, which is using a methodology of dealing with many small businesses at one go. Because, for example, if you are dealing with, let's say, small-scale farmers, obviously their problems are the same. And instead of dealing with them one by one, you deal with them, with many of them at the same time, and have a structured system. We're calling it one-to-many. We have already piloted it in about 4 provinces, and it has produced tremendous results in Brazil. We hope it will do the same here. Mamandouche, you asked details about the national partnership. At SIDA, the expertise we have is the understanding of small businesses and their needs and how to respond to them. And we find that national departments have opportunities for small business, but they do not know how to interact and help small businesses. So this is where we come in. Like you correctly identified, the Department of Agriculture were working together on cooperatives, on their training on business. And they would come in and train them on agricultural specific interventions. So that is the nature of the relationship with the national government. With the Department of Provincial and Local Government, they have done a lot of scoping of the 52 district municipalities, and there are certain projects that are already going on there. But the challenge with some of the projects is that they are not sustainable. They don't get to the enterprise level, and the partnership is to assist in identifying which of those projects can actually be enterprises. And that is what we are doing with them. With CITAS, there is actually encouraging outcomes in the northwest area, where there is a lot of mining activity. We are partnering with the mining qualification center is what they call the M2A. I myself experienced that training that is going on very rigorously in the province. They actually come and do the training themselves. Vida does the organizing of the training. So that's the nature of the relationship, because we don't have to use our own money for training when the seekers have this money. It's the same relationship we have with the wholesale and retail seekers. In terms of the assistance we are getting from the international partners, I'll start with the Finnish government, because they are giving two levels of support. They are supporting our budget, they top up our budget, and I think the CFO can give the specific figures. But they also provided CEDA with technical support in the form of Ms. Cherbo, who's sitting right there. But she has been with us, and that arrangement is ending at the end of this month. In terms of other international arrangements, we are benefiting a lot, especially from institutions that are similar to us. We're sharing the program, sharing what works and what doesn't work, so that we discard it. But we also are learning something about how they have managed to address the issues of sustainability. That is to ensure that the institution is able to support itself in the long term. In terms of how branches partner with other people in the local environment, even the setting up of branches is done in partnership with that local municipality. So what is actually emerging is that those municipalities, in terms of their LED programs, they actually ask CEDA to assist in specific areas where they have no capacity to do that. So this is an emerging partnership with all the CEDA branches. The accreditation and the training list of courses, we do have information on all the training that we give to SMMEs, and I think that we would also forward. I think some of the questions have been answered, and Professor Chen has taken that. The industrial policy, we definitely are engaging with it. I think Charles has talked about mining beneficiation, but we have identified specific sectors where we believe jobs are created most, like manufacturing. And obviously, we are working with the department in terms of the export strategy to support those businesses that are ready to export by preparing them. Mr. Maza asked a question on the peri-urban and rural. What you see in the slide is just the current geographic spread. It's not the allocation of the budget per se to say that's where it's going. How we developed our network is that we used the existing infrastructure that we had with the institutions that were managed to create us. And then the expansion is based on the agreement we have with the municipalities. So we have made it a priority that whenever we establish a branch, it would definitely address the rural areas. Like I indicated, this is where most of the expansion is happening. Like you have seen in Gauteng, we are not famous because we believe there are other agencies that are active there. Then you asked about the medium-term strategy. And I think if you saw our objectives, and when I outlined the objectives and the focus area, that covers the midterm strategy, which is reviewed every year by the board. So those strategic objectives are covering the midterm period. Just finally, I think there was an issue about food soldiers, or do we just depend on the media? Yes, we use a lot of community radio stations because the branches are free to use whatever resources they have to reach the local environment. And of course, we respond to any opportunity that's provided to us. But part of what CEDA branches are doing is not really to wait for people to come in. There is information on how many workshops they are going out to do. And starting this current financial year, there is an initiative to focus on startups, because people who want to start a business need a very detailed intervention. So we will have focus on what we call business startup days, where we get all our partners to address the needs of people who want to start. And like I said, the cadet program I referred to would also address the issue of food soldiers, having people who will be able to reach many communities. But also, What we have tried to do is to explore with the Department of Public Services how we can use the development workers that they have, because we understand that we can utilize those people. So this is why partnerships are so important. And finally, Mr. Chairman and members, I think Mr. Ngelana's question really, he was raising an issue around GCIS that he didn't see is there. We do work with GCIS, but I believe we can improve that because we always respond to their request for information. There was a project that we were going to do with them of a particular magazine where they wanted information on SMEs. And that is ongoing because we provide that information to them. But I think we can utilize that relationship more, so we have noted that. In terms of international partners, especially on the continent, you will notice that in the slide on partnerships, there is a partnership with what we call TechnoNet Africa. This is a relationship with organizations with six other African countries. And we're partnering with organizations, government agencies like CEDA, and also business associations. And one of the programs we are looking at working with them on is this rural development program, which is based on an Asian concept of one product, one village. So it's already tested in some of these countries, and we believe their lessons can inform how we structure our own. The FMME Agencies Forum, I don't know if Ms. Mandri is the Chief Director for Enterprise Development Unit, who's also a member of our board, maybe can explain more the thinking behind. But it is actually captured in the small business strategy, and it's addressing the coordination project. And it's saying CEDA must play a lead in terms of setting up that forum, which is made up of all agencies that support small business, including provincial ones, so that we don't have duplication. And CEDA has been given that responsibility. So we take our mandate from that judgment, and it's something we are hoping to set up this year. Center of Learning, I think I have explained that. And graduation of small businesses from the second economy. I think to address that question, it is actually linked to my first comment, which is to say we need to do more in that area. It will need really bold approaches, and it takes a lot of time, capacity, and money to do that. And in the first phase of CEDA's formation, which is the past years of our existence, we have tried to set up the institution so that it is ready for delivery. And I think our response to business unusual is to say we have the infrastructure, we have the organization up and running, it has started to do good work, and we are ready to be bold. But we need the support and a direction definitely from the DTI, and with the support of the members, because when you are bold, you have to break some rules sometimes, and you are not allowed to break no rules. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Director General, I don't know if you'd like to take the opportunity to break your silence.
So thanks, Chairperson and members. I'll speak to two strategic issues. One is in relation to the comment of Professor Turok, as well as the comment of Honorable Oliphant. And it is to say yes, indeed. I think the bulk of this report and discussion has focused on matters of an operational nature to demonstrate progress with establishing these institutions, getting them to function, and so on. And it's quite clear that in as far as operational effectiveness and so on, that we are doing very well. They are improving their processes and their systems.
But that's, in fact, the more interesting issues may not have emerged in the presentation. Because, you see, this work of small business development and micro-enterprise development and microfinance is probably one of the most complex areas of work of the department, next to industrial policy, next to industrial development. Exceedingly complex, exceedingly difficult and challenging. And perhaps in the way we report that complexity and the full scope of the challenges don't emerge. And so I do take the point that we may want to structure future engagements in such a way that they allow us the opportunity to get into these sort of issues. For example, this is an area of work where the three tiers of government have competence. So it's shared competence. It raises the question of what is it that has been done at the local government level, the provinces, and how do we coordinate and interact. Now, that area is full of complexities and contradictions that haven't come out here. So I agree that we need to, in future, come to some common understanding about really what are the lines of march, what are the key performance indicators that will enable us to evaluate whether we're making progress, whether we're making a difference. And I agree, we must massify, especially massify all of these things that we've heard. The products are there, the services are there. But the professor is correct. We're doing this thing on such a minuscule scale that given the needs and the challenges, we will not make a difference, we will not make an impact. So we must massify, but we must be, we believe, because we're ready, we've got institutional mechanisms, we must be enabled to massify through a much more robust mandate and much more robust resourcing of this work. I agree with the Prof as well that because of the complexity and the diversity of this area, you need evidence-based approaches, evidence-based interventions, and there's ongoing research that we are conducting, because small business development is not an area that attracts a lot of research interest. So we also have to generate our own research, our own baseline information against which to calibrate our strategies and interventions. What you've heard, especially in relation to CEDA, small business development, but also to some extent microenterprises, is based on the work of the 10-year review of small business development strategies and policies in South Africa. Now, that still remains one of the flagship documents and data bases, I think, in terms of this area. A lot of this is outdated and requires updating and so on. So I would like to refer members to that document because I know it's not everyone is aware of it, a lot of women have read it. It's a document that identifies where the gaps are that informed CEDA's creation, SAMAF's creation, and so on. So we do need to go back to that document, because what we're doing clearly has a basis, an empirical basis. But clearly, I think there is the need for ongoing research so we better understand the full spectrum of needs and challenges in this area. So there are some strategic things which I think we may need to come back to at a later stage. Chairperson, you may consider. I know that the committee sometimes holds workshops which spends more time with ourselves and the committee on precisely how we structure those future engagements. I thank you very much.
Thank you,
Chair.
I think the nature of the presentation then, as is clear from the contribution from members also, it would
require us to avail more time in the form of a workshop so that we are able to canvas the areas better. I don't think we have asked all the questions and made all the comments that we could have today, and nor have you in return replied fully as you could have. So that speaks to the necessity of structuring something where we can give quality time to this. I'm not saying that this morning's engagement has not been quality, but greater attention, time, and resources. So I'm not sure if we can go any further than this for today. The members look sufficiently exhausted by the answers, and the presenters are equally engaged. Good folks, I would like to thank all of you for the time and the preparations that you've made to make this engagement meaningful. Thank you to one and all. Meeting adjourned. There might be cold coffee and tea outside. I'm told there's a finger lunch. I just hope we are not eating somebody's finger.
Thank you.